Good evening. What our practice teaches us is simply that if we want to appreciate our life, it is important for us to express ourselves in the simplest way. In other words, without clutter, without unnecessary clutter, so that we can see things clearly, without confusion and without distortion. And so if we want to have a life free of clutter, it means we have to put aside ideas we have about gaining ideas and letting go of the emphasis on finding excitement. These days, these modern times, there's a big emphasis on finding excitement in everything and everywhere and in all our activities. It is a very high priority for most people, finding excitement. But to appreciate our life, we have to let that go. So many people come to this practice or explore this practice because of excitement, because of the idea to gain some kind of excitement, which they feel they can do in a number of different ways. One exciting idea is they will gain some understanding from this practice or gain some kind of wisdom. That's very exciting. Or perhaps they will increase the power of their mind, their intellectual capacity, and the skill of deciding things and creating things. That's also very exciting. Then there's the idea that the practice will resolve all of our confusion and our uncertainty, or that we will gain fame in the eyes of others, or that we will have a sangha, a community to share our life with. All of these things can be very exciting ideas and can draw people to try to practice. But when we start to practice, and as we continue our practice, we discover that the practice itself is very unexciting. We don't receive any stimulating experience from sitting quietly. And there is no obvious or noticeable reward or payoff from sitting. We are simply alone with our mind, and it feels like, it can feel like, oh, nothing is happening. This is not exciting. And because there is no excitement, many people just don't stay with the practice for too long, and they seek excitement somewhere else. Recently, I was talking to somebody about Zazen practice, and he said, "Well, I won't be coming back." I said, "How come?" He said, "Well, I need to get on with my life." and I didn't understand that. It wasn't clear to me that there was something preventing him from doing his life. So I said, well, what do you mean? And he said, I don't have time to sit. When we say to ourselves, and we are convinced in our mind that we don't have time to sit, this is one way that we fool ourselves, and how we fool others. There's always time to sit. So the real meaning of this person, the real feeling that this person had is that, well, zazen is boring. It's boring. It's sitting there. It's not exciting. I don't like it, so I don't want to do it. So to say to ourselves, or to even believe that I'm really interested, but I don't have time, this is a real cover-up, isn't it? Instead of acknowledging the real reason why we quit, which is it's not exciting. And unless we admit to ourselves that we are attached to excitement and we have a gaining idea, we really can't appreciate our life if we fool ourselves in that way. So we may say, and we may even feel, that this practice is very boring, but actually that's not true. Zazen is simply what it is. We sit quietly. If we judge it as being boring, we are simply saying, I have my preferences. My activities have to meet certain preferences. And if we say, I'm not going to do this because it's boring, we are demanding that the practice meet our preferences. You meet my preferences or I won't do it. So if we leave the practice too soon because of those ideas, we miss an opportunity. So most people prefer excitement to non-excitement, and people prefer entertainment to non-entertainment. So there's no entertainment value in zazen. And so the feeling is, well, it's boring. This is the same thing as saying it has no value. So if we haven't yet learned how the mind judges the activities of our life, and if we haven't yet learned to understand how the mind makes up stories in order to fool itself and fool others, then it has a hard time with spiritual practice. And at the same time, hard time with everyday relationships. Now, in the past 10 years or maybe even more, we have seen gambling become very popular in this state. Many gambling casinos have been built in card rooms and things like that. And wherever they are built, they are very popular, and they are successful financially. They bring in a lot of money. And my wife and I were talking about this phenomenon, and she said, you know, I can't understand the appeal of these places. People must get some kind of rush, some kind of excitement, like a drug. They must get some kind of rush. Now, for somebody who gambles, who's not a professional gambler, the gambling can feel exciting. Professional gamblers doesn't care anymore. It's just business. But if you're not a professional and you go to gambling, it can feel very exciting and get very high emotionally by doing that. Oh, boy. There is an emotional high that comes with going to gamble because there's a chance of, you know, what we say, winning something. I can win something. And this activity, this idea is never boring. There's always some excitement. There's always a rush. But this kind of excitement is a very big addiction. And it doesn't take place only in the casino. The excitement in a gambling casino is only just one expression of a mind that is addicted to excitement. And most people are caught by this kind of excitement in some way, usually without being aware that they are addicted. This is how we create karma in our lives. So if somebody comes to a practice here and is excited about the possibility of obtaining something through the practice, then this room becomes like a casino. There is excitement at the prospect of winning something. And this sort of trap, people who first come, it's possible they can fall into this kind of trap. So, of course, we have to be patient with new people as they learn what's going on. Because Zazen is not some kind of game. And so nothing happens very fast. Things don't move along in some speedy fashion. And nothing happens that's very obvious. It's very subtle. In Zazen, there is no exciting color, no exciting sound, no exciting activity. So if attainment, the idea of attainment, remains a purpose or a goal of our of practice, then we will leave, we'll quit. Because we would think, well, there's this activity has no reward. And it feels discouraging. So if we feel excited about practice, it's a warning that we are not seeing things correctly. So somebody who whose excitement is not satisfied by practice and they feel bored and they leave, it's like they're saying, I have no more chips to spend at this table. And this is a misunderstanding, and of course the mind is fooling itself and isn't seeing things clearly. So if a very famous spiritual teacher, a very well-known spiritual leader, gives a talk, gives a public lecture, a talk in public, you know, many people may go to hear this person because they know the name and they know the reputation. So they go to hear what this person has to say. And they may feel some excitement because they feel they may be gaining some new knowledge and some new information or some new insights by being with this person. They feel they are excited because they will obtain something that's okay and something that's useful. New ideas, new points of view, something to make life richer. So there's some excitement. And so they go to hear the lecture. But the true test is, will these same people be in the zendo or on their cushion the next morning? This is human nature. So the question for us is, after the excitement, then what? Will we simply look for more excitement? Or will we be able to practice without having any ideas of boring or exciting? So people, sometimes people will say that Zazen is boring, but actually boring is its most important quality. If you stop to look at the practice, boring is most important quality. When we can make an effort to let go of excitement and mental distractions, when we can simply let Zazen be as it is, you know, boring, when we can simply leave it alone, not judge it, and let it be as it is, then we can see what is going on in our own mind. We can see subtle states of our mind. We can see the activities in our mind that we formerly were not aware of. This is what boring, this is what boredom can do for us. Let us see things that we didn't see before. But when the mind is very busy or seeking excitement, it cannot be calm and it cannot be reflective. So what is known as a boring mind is really the calm surface of a pond or the clear surface of a mirror that accurately reflects what appears. And then we can recognize how our mind wanders and gets distracted, and we can recognize what it is that it wanders towards. And there's quite a bit of wisdom in that. And this is a big opportunity. A boring mind can give us a big opportunity. And we can consider, why is my mind going there? When I sat in Zazen, my mind wanted to go to this. Why does it go there? What about this distraction appeals to me? So we study ourselves through our boring mind, through our boring practice. And like Suzuki Roshi said, we have to go back to the source of our karma. In other words, we have to understand what is the root of the desire, what is the root of our desire that is creating our suffering. We never can have that understanding if we are emphasizing excitement. So the boring, the so-called boring quality of Zazen enables us to discover the root of our difficulties. And in that way, boring, the so-called boring quality is a great gift. Through it, we can come to appreciate the quality of our life and the quality of our practice. And our practice can teach us this in so many ways. For example, when we have a meditation retreat here, and we take two meals, breakfast, we have breakfast and we have lunch. The bowls we eat with are very plain. And the food that we are offered is very plain, nothing fancy. There is no artistic arrangement of the food. A bowl of rice is presented to you and you have some. A soup is presented and you have some. And there's fruit or something like that. Nothing artistic. No attempt to be exciting. Nothing exciting in the presentation of the food. You know, the kind of excitement or artistic presentation you might expect in a very upscale restaurant. You know, you've been to these upscale restaurants where they serve a dish of food and it's very fancy, the range very fancy, but there's not much there. It's carved and curled and has this fancy sauces. When we take a meal during retreat, and the rice is put into our bowl, the rice takes the shape of the bowl, does it not? The rice doesn't insist on having its own unique shape. The rice takes the shape of the bowl, and it shapes itself around the spoon, just very naturally, and nothing is added. So when we accept the meal, when we accept the rice and the other parts of the meal without excitement, we will appreciate the taste and the texture of the very simple food that is offered to us. And we will appreciate how the food enters our body, and we will appreciate how it nourishes us. And we will be very happy to have the simple meal. But when food and the serving of it is too exciting, we will lose appreciation for the food itself, and we will talk about its fanciness, its presentation. So we should keep our activity, our practice. We should keep our practice very ordinary and very simple, without ideas of excitement. And just make a quiet effort in each moment. And this is the best way to appreciate our life. And it brings us very quiet joy. Are there any questions tonight? Yes, Carolina?
Could you explain? Maybe explain is the wrong word. How do you react to Dogen's statement that Zazen, sitting Zazen, is itself enlightenment? How do you respond to that? Yes, you can say yes. You didn't mention that sitting Zazen itself is enlightenment. Nothing else is necessary. And I'm wondering if you could explain the word enlightenment.
Oh. Well, I'm hoping it is just what I spoke about tonight.
Okay.
I'm hoping it is what I spoke about tonight.
Miss Extra.
Well, it's come to us through literature. It's come to us through translation of text from other cultures, and I think in Japanese or Sanskrit or other Buddhist traditions, it meant something a little bit different, I'll bet. I think the translation. In a famous quote by Suzuki Roshi in his book, where he says, Zen is not some kind of excitement, just your ordinary practice will build up your character. So if we have this kind of attitude, this kind of understanding, and this kind of attitude, this kind of orientation, that says, I'm not practicing to gain anything, I'm practicing to build my character, because it can always be improved. Until the day I die, I will improve my character. I would say this is enlightenment. If somebody tells you that, you can say, oh, he gets it. When people read about this practice and it talks about enlightenment, that sounds very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
I want that.
Yeah.
But it's a misunderstanding, and it takes a while to appreciate that it's wisdom is not about, you know, obtaining. We don't have to obtain some exciting thing to have wisdom. That's not how it works. And when we begin to understand that, that's a kind of enlightenment. It's like saying, oh, I get it. I've been chasing my tail. I'm going to stop that. Something like that. So if somebody asks you what enlightenment, you can tell them, when we stop chasing our tail. That'll hold them for a while. And I would say it's not too far off the mark. Thank you.
Last night I was reading, and the beginner, first few pages of Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, and Suzuki Roshi says that, the enlightenment experience, that we don't... that's kind of secondary. That's not something that we emphasize. And yet here we have this word, enlightenment, and I think a lot of people are hooked by it.
Yes.
There must be something there, you know? There must be something to get.
You think?
I think that people could be confused, yes.
Okay, that's true. So we try not to worry about such concepts. It only distracts us. But thank you. Yes, please.
So, just I'm interested in what you said about the addiction to excitement. And for me, in my life, I would like to simplify my life and center myself and just focus on what needs to get done. But I always find myself going out with friends or doing things which are exciting when I'd rather focus on doing work. Or are you saying that meditating on a regular basis would help reduce the addiction to excitement?
Well, going out with friends is not a bad thing.
Yeah, but I mean, just like maybe doing it too much, you don't have to focus on.
Well,
I'm pushing it too far, going out with friends, staying out too late.
Oh, okay. So,
does the practice actually, because it's helped develop self-control necessary to,
Well, it's important not to make promises about what the practice will do or will not do. Practice is, this meditation practice is in a way a vehicle for you to make your own effort. If you feel that your life is not balanced, and you say, I have to figure out how to get it balanced. If you keep that motivation in mind when you sit, you may begin to see what balance looks like. And you may begin to see that, I do this too much. Maybe I should not do that so much. Mm-hmm. Begin to see things. But if you feel an unbalance in life, then it... in order to come to balance, the first thing we have to do is admit we're not balanced. Like, that's my problem. I'm going to work on my problem. My problem has to do with I'm out of balance. So we come to sit with this motivation. But there's no promises because it all depends on, you know, the effort we put into it and our dedication and our consistency and many things like that. So practice is the vehicle for our effort. So sometimes people have a misunderstanding when they first hear about the practice and want to try it. They have a misunderstanding that all they have to do is sit on the cushion and it will magically fix things. We have to bring a certain attitude towards the cushion. We can't just come and be passive and say, okay. Okay, cushion, do your magic. I think some people, you know, have that feeling when they first start, and it's maybe a natural misunderstanding. So little bit by little bit, people learn that, oh, I have to put myself into it. This is just a vehicle. Not just the vehicle. This is the vehicle. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, please, Gita.
You mentioned improving character as a through practice. I'm just wondering, is there not another gaining idea behind that? How does what's different?
Paying attention to improving our character, you know, that's not a gaining idea because there's nothing to gain, you know, to get from outside. It's all kind of effort we make from inside. So there's nothing to gain. We see, gaining is something that we can obtain. So if we, for example, if we are with some friends or something and we act in a selfish way, we're not kind, and we realize it later, say, oh, I was selfish. I have to watch myself. I have to pay more attention in moments like that so that I'm not selfish. This is a kind of character building, and it's not about gaining something called unselfish. It's not about gaining it. It's about being authentic in the world and not having misleading ideas or being distracted. So we might say what we gain is our own authenticity. And being in the world quite naturally. And this is not, we're not gaining anything, we're simply joining, coming home. Yes, please.
Is your message about letting go of the need for excitement more about avoiding doing things that are exciting, or more so emotionally and mentally letting go of the need for excitement? Because I think we live in a very exciting, part of the world. This is an area people migrate here from all over the world to be here. And I think it's difficult to avoid excitement. We're surrounded by constantly traffic, buildings, construction, jobs, everything. Can we be in this place and just simply not need the excitement and to be okay regardless of what our days look like? Is that what the message is about?
You know, what we're talking about, you know, it's okay to get excited about things. That's going to happen. Oh, this is great. Just, you know, when it's over, let it go and stop craving to get it again. Mm-hmm. This is the problem, the addiction. You know, you go to a party with your friends and afterwards you say, boy, that was really exciting. Next morning, it's a new day. See what happens. So it's the addiction part that we're talking about.
Thank you.
Yeah. Umar.
Les, I was kind of confused by what you had said about the man who had said that he did not have time for the practice. And what I was, my mind went off on this, and I was thinking about how this can be with people too, that people can turn around and say to somebody else that I don't have time for you.
Yes.
In a relationship. And that's like almost saying that this is not another human being, this is a thing.
That's right.
So it's the reduction of humanity completely.
Yes.
And something that's like, you know, it can be like smoking a cigarette or eating a bag of chips, and you know, when the fascination is gone, you just drop it and move on to something, some other kind of fascination. This is like what our culture has become. It's more of a disposable culture. We're disposing people, we're disposing things, we're disposing everything. This is a big thing that's happening.
You're right. You're correct. My favorite American author is Saul Bellow. And in one of his books, I read in one of his books years ago where he said, our culture now treasures things more than people, which is what you're saying. And he said this when he wrote this book 50 years ago or something. And that's it's a commentary on the kind of society we've created. We treasure things more than people. And like you said, when we tell somebody, I don't have time for you, this is treating them like a thing. So you're right. This is where our society is going. This is where our society is. And the question is, how do we, in the face of that, how do we respond to it if we feel that's not the way we want to be? So that's a good, you make a very good point tonight. Thank you. Oh, Dave.
So, Les, you were comparing excitement to an addiction, and I think it certainly is true that by distracting us and taking away our attention from practice, that excitement can have that negative impact. But I wonder if at least a part of what happens isn't simply that we get addicted to excitement and that by taking our attention it distracts us, but that actually there's a part of our mind, and I think you were alluding to this earlier, that wants to be distracted, that wants the excitement to basically keep us from looking too closely at our lives. I, think we do this individually, and I think we also do it collectively. And perhaps sometimes when you feel that you're overdoing things by running around being excited with other people, that's a form of that collective mutual distraction. It's sort of the opposite of what happens during a sesshin, when we all come together and spend the day together and we don't chatter. We don't distract ourselves from looking at things more deeply. So I think that excitement, I mean, there's one of my favorite books sort of touches on this. It was written many years ago, and it was not about excitement in general, but specifically about the way that people get addicted to excitement on television. But the title of the book I thought was quite wonderful. It's called Amusing Ourselves to Death. And I think that says a lot about our addiction to excitement.
Yeah, good. Thank you.